and welcome to Kaput Radio. My name is Martin Jansen. This podcast is a presentation of an article by Graham Ferguson and spoken by Louise Mehta. It describes the present mechanisms in use for financing our economy. It shows how the relationship between bank and client produces destructive effects on our global society and our environment. Also outlined is how an alternative could look and how to implement it for the sake of a better world. Listen carefully and enjoy. A proposed alternative to profit growth, the goal of human existence, written by Graham Ferguson.
Most of us shudder at the use of the term profit growth in our small, blue, finite world. But few ever ask, the reason for that kind of growth? What's the true meaning of wealth? What does profit growth do for our culture, for our lives? Why is it our economic growth for survival? Why is growth so essential? Our talk here explains the economic phenomenon of profit growth and the basic reason why it is the goal of our existence. Put another way, it shows why so many of us are unaware we can't exist without constantly achieving a growth in profit. As well, we talk of an alternative, a new fiscal proposal outlining a rational goal, one fit for a humane existence. But firstly, let's carefully consider just what we know, or don't know, of the present economy. We can look at why it needs perpetual funding top-ups. The activities of both a client and a bank are responsible for the level and movement of money in our economy. When the banking industry, with its client as partner, buys a good from the marketplace, it is putting money into circulation. This purchase pays the vendor of a good or service required by its client. The transacted finance adds to the community's money pool. Money already circulating is different in its response to trading. This is the community's money, and no matter how numerous the transactions, it does not raise or lower the level of finance in it. But because profit for bank-client tradings requires more out of circulation than goes in, a continual growth in profit is essential. But this seemingly simple procedure can be rather misleading. A bank and client purchase, adding to and removing amounts from circulation, seem like an uncomplicated, safe and fairly normal business deal. That is, till we realise its true effect on society, and how and why we're forced to behave in ways contrary to our finer feelings and basic intelligence. So each of the next few procedural steps should be carefully observed. They are critical to grasping the profit growth rationale and humanity's incredible goal. With profit as the shared aim, banks and their clients together formalise a legally binding alliance. Initially using the bank's money and the client's deposit money, they potentially do the community's buying. These partners, through their buying, are investing their capital and increasing the money level in circulation. Clients are investing their future income plus their income-derived deposit up front. This arrangement could be seen as long-term bank-client joint venture. Please accept that these are new terms. We are using a new language for describing bank industry economics. This wording brings a clearer picture of our relationship with finance. The bank-client partnership is a contractual agreement based on an over-agreed time period. The client's individual profit comes from the always increasing financial value of the jointly purchased co-owned good or service. The level of money circulating within a community is entirely reliant on the financial profit from bank-client purchases. Let's remember that profit growth requires the taking of more from circulation than the partners put in, so an ongoing, ever-increasing level of joint venture buying is required. The increased bank-client joint venture buying is a much-needed process in securing a successful financial outcome. Profit growth is the economic goal because its resulting finance is humanity's only access to goods and services. It's the economy in which we all now struggle, with varying degrees of success, for a livelihood or survival. It's also where daily many millions of us just don't survive. Ask UNICEF and Save the Children. Without growth in profit, even our first world economy would collapse, resulting in a globally depressed third world economy for us all. These points illustrate our human concept of worth. Our values equate entirely with finance. Under this system, money is where our values must lie for our short-term survival. Long-term is out of the question as profit growth must be achieved now. It is because the product is only as good as the money available to access it. In itself, the product, good or service, has no value at all. If there is no money to buy it, it cannot be used. So deprived millions live in poverty or die of neglect. Money, not the product, is the only value we strive for. The method we use to finance our economy does not cover the cost of the profit growth that secures it. It leaves a financial gap, a scarcity of money, a monetary shortfall. It's a flaw in an economy so designed that finance and its growth shadows all aspects of the human experience. Economists, finance experts, imagine growth in profit itself provides a temporary local fix. Maybe, but it actually only succeeds in continuing the shortfall elsewhere. It perpetuates the gap that reappears as quickly as it is filled. Historically, many thinkers have reflected on our cultural mores and social divisions. Our present social culture, because of funding shortages, has to be based on winning in a world of competing combatants, leaving in its wake a plethora of losers. Competitor versus competitor versus nature may be about as primitive as any society can get or has ever been. Regardless of the differing values of the haves and the have-nots, we endure not only the combative and the competitive, but the corrupt. Most of us wish for a world united, steeped in a culture of rational cooperation, not combat, disguised as peace talks. But it would seem the main purpose of the present system and the one proposed are on the same page in just one sense. They do both provide a method of access to goods and services, but in differing measures. Otherwise, they're completely at odds. But with profit growth now firmly lodged as the goal of our human existence, this type of growth alone determines how we run our lives. It's how we power our economy in the prevailing competitive world where combative behaviour is mandatory. Humankind are forced to exploit not only each other but every available resource. The use, misuse, abuse of nature's gifts gains us only tenuous financial access to necessities. We are forced by finance's rules of engagement and the law of self-preservation to submit to this outrageous regime with its horrific outcomes. It's interesting to reflect on the products of industry appearing as a secondary value. Goods are used by our producers and traders solely as a vehicle for commercial acquisition of profit and its means of growth. Traders are competitors ruthlessly striving and exploiting each other and their customers for that so necessary but so scarce finance, which mostly leads to corruption. But we and they exhibit no sign of knowing how to create better incomes. Till now we've accepted the excuse, it's just the way things are. It takes a basic, desperate, competitive struggle for anyone to beat the opposition and reach the top echelons of a corrupted culture. Yes, we have learned to cooperate within our group, but only so it may outcompete the opposition. Once accepted, the system puts the user forever in its unremitting thrall. Our present banking era was conceived by an act of the English Parliament on June 27, 1694. After outlining the rules under which the bank could operate, the Act was passed in the House of Commons. The Bank of England was born. The relevant part of those rules is right there in the Act's Section 27. It allows the Bank of England to buy and deal in goods and services, wares, merchandise, and sell them to a client for profit. This is the exact rule followed by today's banks, but they still use the left or deposited money lent language of the Act, when really the bank and its client is buying the goods or wares or merchandise outright and calling it a security. Having secured a client's deposit of saved, not borrowed money, plus a signed contract to pay, the bank supposedly buys, then sells the item to the client on time payment. This, in bank speak, is lending their client the money. The client is then paying off the loan in increments as mortgagee. To comply with Section 27 of the Act's wording, bank language likes us to imagine the client leaving a security with them. The only actual security is the client's suitable income. In reality, a successful bank and client partnership both invest in property and profit. The bank's income profits from its client's income-derived payments, and the client profits from the product. A bank's money and a client's deposit money purchases the merchandise, and this has become the security. In truth, the bank and client alliance today now buys everything for us, aided by modern technology. The bank and client partnership pays the vendor, and we, the bank and us, even buy our groceries with our bank partnership credit cards. During the whole process, the only money we've had or used or that passed through our hands is money from our own income. In bank speak, we're to believe we are holding sums of money out on loan to us. We have borrowed, so therefore in debt. The system has exposed itself as corruptive. It induces corrupt economic practices for those who strive to reach a level of financial security above the poverty line. It produces an amoral, inhumane society. It is a culture frustrated at every turn by financial scarcity. As an intelligent species, we try to stop corruption in high and low places and curb the overlogging, overmining, and overexploitation. But these are established industries and must continue, because profit growth is the unsustainable essential that gives us any access to anything. And these industries enjoy enormous profit growth.
The proposed alternative.
In this proposed scenario, however, product becomes the financial value, not money. We can, and we do, certainly make great products in great quantity. You may have been expecting a grand, more sophisticated alternate system, spelt out in economies. However, the product alone, as a new concept of value, could ring in a whole new collaborative cultural era. A world of global peace, sustainable productive prosperity, and social harmony. This new concept of product as the value gives adequate access to goods and services, not to profit growth. We have the skills, the resources, and the technology to produce sustainable goods and services in quantities capable of addressing the needs of our global population, not just those of the lucky few here in the West. In this milieu, a simple, though profound, culture and psychological change can take place. It is a new way of thinking, an environment where our true, caring, collaborative nature can be exercised. A humane social culture in a stress-less economy is not an impossible dream. It is the logical outcome of a rational finance system. The present economy is run on the basis of a flawed and irrational rule of finance. The introduction of the new method of financing production would initiate a new economy. It would call for a fresh review of the last few centuries of our history. The chronological events of our recent past remain unchanged, but the reasons for them may be of eye-opening interest to future historians. As an example of how the proposed alternative finance works, In Australia, the government expects to spend $486.87 billion into circulation in the 2018-2019 financial year. Unfortunately, instead of boosting the economy, the type of finance we now endure has become and will continue as a growing burden to it. At present, these hundreds of billions of dollars are a liability to the people, to the nation. In the new economic proposal, the value in our productive capabilities would be the main consideration. With no changes whatsoever to the proposed budget's wish list, and with only the slight alteration in the government financing policy, the hoped-for, buoyantly successful economy can emerge. It's the promised new global cooperative economic culture made possible. This is how the 2018-2019 government's budget is buying the goods and services needed to run the nation's economy. So instead of being bond-burdened and mostly dysfunctional, this new economy, built on the value of product and our productivity, leaves a stable, unencumbered $487 billion in circulation as purchasing power in the first year alone. The government money, buying budgetary needs from the public marketplace, puts for the first time a stable currency into circulation. This finance remains in and circulates in the community. It does not have to be taxed. A stable currency in circulation, resulting in a stable economy, would soon see the rapid phasing out of and the closure of bank client buying and bank government buying. Imagine a new modern government buying its needs at the market established price from the public domain with its own money. Its finance is created by government for and to the value of the products and services created by the industrial efforts of the population. Not from bonds created by government for sale to the banking industry, where bond yields have eventually to be paid and the bonds bought back, thus creating financial scarcity and lack of access. The going rate for most goods and services would be initially just carried over from the recent profit growth economy, but prices as usual would continue to respond to rapid technological advances. Initially, this proposal is not easy to grasp, and we shouldn't expect an instant recognition of its mechanism, or see it clearly up there in flashing lights. For most of us, it requires carefully considered research and a review put to some algorithmic questioning. But for civilizations and our planet's sake, don't just dismiss it with an, "Oh, I've read or heard that." This talk is not for your entertainment. The birth of a new idea is not the flash of a cartoon light bulb. That's just the moment of conception. Then comes the lengthy gestation period. And finally, when the time is right, a fresh thought is born, and the new idea may become a reality. All that's needed is the realization of it.
Thank you for listening and for your interest. You heard a presentation of an article by Graham Ferguson, spoken by Louise Mehta. I recorded and produced this podcast in Nimbin, Northern New South Wales, Australia. There are many older productions available as free downloads if you visit radioforall.net, that is radioforall.net. Please use the navigation tools to select Sirius. Then under the letter K, you will find Kaput X Radio, indexing all Kaput Radio productions. These allows you to freely download older podcasts. We hope to have contributed to a better understanding of our reality. My name is Martin Jansen, and you may find future productions on this web address.